strategically using EdTech tools in your science classroom can completely transform your students' engagement and interest in the content you teach. And this is why. Since there's no need for a stock supply closet, complicated setups, or thorough cleanups between periods, you can make science come alive as a practice in your classroom with consistency every single day. Why every day? Because the more consistently you prompt your students to do all the science stuff, the observing, the inferencing, the citing evidence, and the analyzing, the more fluent they're going to become in those skills in the long term. And those skills, those are life skills. So you're going to be making a bigger difference every day. You're going to go home feeling more fulfilled and heck, maybe just go home happy. When you turn to technology, curiosity becomes the classroom culture. Your students will begin to expect it and even look forward to it every day. Bye-bye behavior problems. And what's more, you can even transform your own workflow with the right EdTech tools. Without spending hours scoring student work, you will still know what tasks each student is able to do and the level of understanding or the depth of knowledge they have in each of those tasks. In this video, I'll share with you my three favorite types of technology to support every stage of your science teaching, before, during, and after instruction. This is tech that will make planning lessons, delivering lessons, and establishing that open communication between you and your students and their families so much more efficient and so much more effective. Before I get started with any of that, though, let me know in the comments below, what's your current favorite tech tool for teaching science? This might be a STEM-related tool, or maybe a tool that you use for collaboration, or maybe even assessment tool. Once you share that, be sure to stick around in this video, watch to the end, where I'll tell you how you can get my EdTech Essentials Guide. This is a guide that will help you get started implementing any or all of these tools that I'm sharing in the video today. And if we haven't met yet, I'm Lisa. I was kind of forced into this EdTech world on account of the fact that I have taught chemistry online for a cyber charter school in Pennsylvania for 15 years. To bring science to life in that environment, I had to rely on technology. But even if I were to go work a different job and move to a face-to-face environment tomorrow, I would take all of my EdTech-based lessons with me. I believe in and love this approach so much that now I'm on the internet trying to help other science teachers trade their talk for tech and get more joy from their jobs in the process. There's just one more thing I want to get out of the way before I share with you all these strategic specifics. You may not realize it yet, but maybe there's an elephant in the room with us. In an age where we know, like it's been proven, that too much screen time is disastrous for our kiddos, I am sitting here suggesting to you that we require students to use it when we're in class with them. And yes, there's some other really practical concerns you might have about that, including things like you're worried that they will kind of drift off from the technology you've given them and go play in some other websites that maybe aren't locked down by your district, or there's always the possibility of Wi-Fi interruptions or a lot of people on the system creating like a lagging effect. And maybe even your school doesn't have the resources to provide one-on-one devices. Though we are in the post-COVID era, and I don't think that that's the case for most of us. Here's the thing. It's my personal position that the pros far outweigh the cons when we're considering heavily integrating EdTech into our science curriculum. Here's why. There's the obvious two. It's less messy and it's less costly. But then let's just talk about how it opens up the opportunities for students. We can literally transport students to places in objects to explore things they could never otherwise visit. I mean, I'm talking as a chemistry teacher, they can visit the atom level. If you're a life science teacher, they can visit the cellular level. If you're an earth and space science teacher, they can go to the core of the earth or the farthest reaches of space. When we're talking about collecting and analyzing data, it takes so much less time. If we think about a natural phenomenon like the half-life of an isotope, this can take days, weeks, months, years, or billions of years. But we could use computer simulations and models to depict that using technology. Another example I can think of is if you're a life science teacher and you are teaching life cycles. That doesn't happen in the blink of an eye. You can't replicate that at a lab workstation. Technology offers us versatility and flexibility, not just in the physical location where they are or the physical time that they're completing the activity, their exploration or discovery, but also that level of differentiation is so much more easily adjusted when we're relying on that technology for it. Also, students kind of love tech to begin with. 21st century skills, anybody? I mean, at this point, they probably have more than we do. And finally, troubleshooting tech problems can create patience. Patience is a virtue that only comes through practice. If you share my sentiments, if you agree with all I just noted as the pros of using EdTech, heavily integrating it into your curriculum, or you're already using it a lot, or you want to use it more, give this video a like now. The very first EdTech tool I'm going to share with you is actually not a singular EdTech tool at all. There is nowhere I can point you to. It doesn't have a name, and that's because it's just abounding out there on the World Wide Web. In fact, I'm going to open this segment of planning, preparation, before instruction strategy with the need for you to become or tap into your innermost resourcefulness. Resourcefulness is going to become your number one teacher trait when you are really heavily relying on technology to deliver active learning experiences for the sake of consistency in your classroom when you're trying to teach science as a practice, not just a collection of facts. Now, if you're not entirely sure what I mean when I say teach science as a practice, I do want you to know I recently uploaded a whole playlist about this called Rethinking How We Teach Science. And that might be a good thing to put on your watch list for later because it really dives deep into the hows and whys of all of that. But for now, just so that we're all on the same page, when I say teaching science as a practice, I'm really referring to providing your students with frequent and regular opportunities to do all the science things, whether we call it the scientific method or engineering design. It's taking in the world around you, assimilating it, gaining some thoughts about it, asking some questions about it, pointing at specific evidence, being able to analyze it and come out with a conclusion. It's about really strengthening those muscles in our brains that do critical thinking, not just the surface stuff. It's about making meaningful moments, not memorization. So to achieve that, I exclusively rely on free resources I find online. Where by resources, I'm totally referring to things like student-controlled simulations, interactive tutorials, videos, and even text-based articles. Now, there are subscription-based resources that you can purchase to access a library of resources like that. But I wrote a year-long chemistry curriculum focusing on active learning every single day for every lesson to address every core idea, and I haven't had to resort to that. In fact, my school even pays for one of those resource subscriptions, and I had already written my curriculum, so I never really desired to go back and revamp any of it based on this exclusive access free paid stuff. largely in part because if my school decides in the near or long-term future that they don't want to pay that license anymore, I haven't lost my lesson completely. Plus, I've explored some of those paid subscriptions. Very few of them are going to check off all the boxes for all the lessons in your content area. And this is all about being consistent. Like, the number one great use of technology in this regard is so that we can bring it consistently. It's not about abandoning our conventional lab tools and techniques and experiences, but being able to, in fact, replicate that process each and every day. If that publisher doesn't have a resource for everything you need, then you're going to have to go looking for free tools anyway. So to find these resources, we're just going to do some simple searching. And we're going to do that simple searching here together. This is very important. I actually can't open up and explore with you a lot of the things we're going to find in this simple search because of copyright violations. Most free resources are designed exclusively for fair use only, which really pretty much blankets you with your students and me with mine, but not so much you and me together. So what I'd recommend you do is probably work along with me, maybe open another tab, do the exact same search I'm doing, and click through some of the results you see so that you can better understand why I'm suggesting to search in a very specific way. For this exercise today, I'm going to pretend that I'm a life science teacher because I'm not. I teach physical science. But I'm going to pretend I'm a life science teacher because and I always like to go after examples that don't fit my mold because I don't want to always be like, chemistry. You're going to get tired of the chemistry, right? So we're either pretty much in one of two buckets here, you and I, life science or physical science. And, you know, we could dive deeper into each of those categories, but just staying surface level for now. We're life science teacher and we want to teach about food chains or food webs. Now, the first thing I'm going to do, and I'm going to recommend that you do, is search for specific topics instead of whole content areas or the name of your course. As a life science teacher teaching food chains, you might be in the middle school, or maybe you're in a biology class teaching a whole segment of the year on ecology, or maybe you're an environmental science teacher. But I've put in here ecology simulations. And as you can see, as we look through these results, they're very broad and far-reaching. We have something called ecology lab, just plain old ecology, the habitable planet. That looks like something that's a little bit more specific. But maybe not so much about food chains and food webs. We have ecology virtual labs, ecology simulation collection. Now, part of the reason you would probably try to go broad like this is so that you have a bank to lean on. You know, when I started, I did put into the search bar chemistry simulations. But the fact of the matter was, on any given day, the core idea I'm after is so specific. And I know in my head what I want my students to see. So it's really best to probably drill down. If this is your first foray into using technology in this way in your classroom, I'd probably advocate you go broad just to see what's out there and what different websites offer in terms of focus on those core ideas. You might be able to create yourself a little curated collection for specific subtopics, like ecology if you're a biology teacher. Look what happens when we look for a very much more specific resource. Here in the search, I've put food chain simulation. Now look at some of the results that we get. Build food chains and food webs. That looks amazing. Food chain game. Now just a quick word about games. Games are worth investigating. Just because it says game doesn't mean it's a matching activity. It doesn't mean that it's totally about skill or drill practice. In fact, I've looked into this food chain game, and I think that if you let your students run loose in there, they could make tons of observations and inferences, and it also takes them through various levels. We have build a food chain game, food chain simulation. And I did just totally random pick food chain, just saying I didn't like do the research first. We have Ecology Lab. This is a really great publisher right here. We have Food Chain Fix, forest food web game. We have a global food security game. And so you could tell just by reading these titles that, first of all, it's very specific, so it's probably right up my alley. Secondly, they're connected to different verbs. We see build food chains. That's definitely a super higher order task. They're not just examining food chains, just not looking at food chains and, like, you know, transcribing them, putting them in notes. They are building them, which means they have to gain some knowledge first and then apply it. All right, so I'm actually going to suggest that you take a moment, maybe put me on pause or do it later, and look into this Build Food Chains and Food Webs resource, the Food Chain Game resource, and the one by Annenberg Lerner called Ecology Lab. And when you look at the three of those, I'm just going to shout out here, at first look, not being a super professional expert in the world of food chains, not even certified to teach life science, I'm going to say Food Chain Game seems like a lower age level, not necessarily elementary, but a lower age level. You know, I teach juniors and seniors and sophomores, so maybe a little lower than that, but it definitely does seem to work through various levels of complexity. While the PBS learning activity, the Build Food Chain and Food Web, is ripe with the opportunity for student-centered learning, where students go through the entire process of learning. You don't even have to really prepare them with much of anything as it pertains to food chains. They collect information on specific organisms and decide how they would fit into it. They're literally building these food chains. And then in the Ecology Lab resource, what you're going to see there, even at first glance, is something much more sophisticated. This might be for your higher level high school student who's in an environmental science class or a course primarily focused on ecology. Maybe it's a half a semester elective. In this resource, the student is not only able to manipulate the simulation, but also and get data in the form of graphs. Graphs that can be interpreted, graphs that are like ripe with evidence that can be cited and argued and analyzed. So if we just recap this little search experiment, the takeaways are that you want to go specific if you're trying to plan a specific core idea focused lesson. If you're just trying to build your library, searching for an overall topic, like insert topic here, simulation, will help you identify your big players maybe in your content area. But if you're looking to design an inquiry-based activity like today, go more specific. And then when you do, don't prejudge anything based on the search results. Click in, see what you're able to see there, and use that content area expertise that you have and your experience as an educator to know which one would be best for your student population. Sometimes you're not going to find any simulations. Student-controlled anything is a great go-to because, obviously, it's student-controlled. Even videos fall into this category because students can pause them along the way and do their thinking work. But when you can't find a simulation, my second go-to would be an interactive tutorial. Now, I can actually show you this resource from SimBucket because SimBucket is amazing. SimBucket is a collection of a few teachers who have killer skills in the tech world, and they want their work shared across all platforms by anyone. This is something actually I use with my own students. And it's kind of like set up like a series of PowerPoint slides. There, even though the very first entry point asks you to include a name, you can include a totally bogus name. There is no privacy issue here with students at all. Their student information does not get logged in the system. And if you see here, they go through the tutorial, and it does tell, it's kind of like a virtual textbook of sorts. And you click the arrows to go to the next piece. So it gives you some facts, but then along the way, there's some interactive pieces. In fact, this piece we're looking at right here is a piece I use just this slide and just like two slides. I think this one and slide three or four. I use it just to get students to experience this opposites attract feature, basically Coulomb's law, because it's such a foundational principle in chemistry. And we don't explore the entire slide deck on the day that I deliver this lesson. just slide 2 and slide 3 so that they can play with that interactive portion. But when we do get to ionic bonding, they can go through this entire activity as an activity. It's not something I've designed, but certainly it's possible. It's still interactive. It's still student controlled. They're still owning the process and able to go at their own pace. And if you just can't be bothered going and searching for your own content area curation of resources like this, you can go to some clearinghouses. There are some databases. One very popular one is called Lab Exchange. Now, you do have to create yourself a little account to even look around there. And the way that works is it is just a collection of free stuff from around the internet. So once you become familiar with the big players in your content area, you might find them there. Or that might be a great launch pad for you to notice who the publisher is and then move on and go directly to their website in the future. But Lab Exchange is not a place you're going to send your students. It's just going to be a pool of resources for you to investigate. And when all else fails, articles can be a great launch pad for creating your own dynamic student-controlled activity if you're using something like an interactive whiteboard, which I'm going to talk about in a few minutes. Now, there was a time, probably not that long ago, probably when you went to school, when really all the articles you can find were on hard copy in the library. And when I boast technology tools, I really am including all of the websites that are accessible to us that have science news and popular science and even things like Khan Academy and their snippets from online that you can use to create your own bigger article for students to work through. That's exactly what I did in this activity designed for my students to learn more about synthesis and decomposition reactions and equations. Seriously, I can't even believe it's been 3 years now, since 4 years since I've been doing this. And every year I go back to the drawing board for this particular activity. And no publisher anywhere has a great simulation or tutorial for it. This is the activity I continue to lean on to teach the lesson. What I want you to take away from this is that if you can imagine it, it's probably out there. And if it's not out there, you can use what is out there to get the job done in your classroom. The two remaining EdTech resources I'm going to tell you about here are for both of the remaining phases of our instruction. They deal with during instruction, the delivery phase, when you're actually leading your lesson with your students, and after instruction, when we're primarily concerned with providing feedback for students to improve, and also data analysis for future data-informed decision-making. Let's focus on the in-person delivery tool first. Since most of you watching this are probably in person with your students every day, unless you're in a really unique educational setting like mine. Are you ready for the most incredible in-person tool? It's Seesaw. Now, if you teach high school science, you probably have never heard of this program before, unless you have little ones of your own that are in elementary school, and usually the lower level elementary school. It's actually marketed on their website primarily as an elementary learning experience for students grades pre-K through grade 6. And in fact, I first learned about it when my kids were in those low-level elementary grades, kindergarten and first grade. And at that point, all I knew about it was that it was an app that could show me what my kid was doing in school all day. I use this tool in a very different way than our early elementary school teaching friends. The best way for me to show you how Seesaw works and what it is for me to show you around my classroom. Now, since this is a video really designed to highlight my favorite EdTech tools, I don't want to go too in the weeds with you here. What I'm going to do is I'm going to show you the three most prominent areas of Seesaw when you're working in it. The first is the journal tab. So you can see that my class actually opens on the journal tab. And as the teacher, you can see every student in your class list. But in a student view, they would see their own progress over time and their prior posts or contributions. There's also the activities tab. Now, on the activities tab, what you're going to see is basically a running a list of every activity you've assigned to this particular class. And as the teacher, you can actually go through and search for specific activities. I'll show you right now that because I have tagged them and sort of when I created them, I put them into virtual folders. I can look up chemical bonding and molecules and specifically look for those archived activities because I did this in the first semester and currently recording this video, it's the second semester. And I could go backwards in time. So my first semester ended around January 12th. And so I go back to a very specific date and no worries, no problem. But in the journal tab, as the teacher, I can look so in a specific folder and for a specific date so I can navigate directly to that activity on December 18th and see all the students who completed that specific activity or whatever activities I assigned on that day. The last thing I want to show you here in Seesaw is where all my activities are kept. And to do that, I'm going to click Add and Assign Activity, and that takes me to the Resource Library. I'm not really sure there's another way to the Resource Library, but you can see here my library is highlighted, and I can scroll down and I've created a number of collections. So when it comes time to do class, I know exactly what topic I'm teaching, and I can click into there, and I know exactly which activity or which differentiated version of the activity I want to assign to specific students or my whole group. And yes, Seesaw can assign to specific students or the whole group. For me, Seesaw is primarily an interactive whiteboard, and it's where I assign all of my artifact outlines. This program supports a wide variety of features, including writing and drawing and things like drag and drop. In every activity, I can attach or embed a web link to a simulation or tutorial or a video, those resources we just got done talking about. Let's look at three quick examples. So here we're looking at Lewis structures for small molecules. And what you can see I've set up in this activity is a place for students to provide snapshots of Lewis structures they prepared. So what they do is they go to this tool and oh yeah, there's instructions up here and tell students to build Lewis structures using this link and answer some guiding questions about those observations. So what they do is they do use their Windows snipping tool once they've built. They use the simulation primarily as the main learning resource. And then they use their snipping tool to grab a snapshot of their final product and they paste it here on the board. And so they do that 5 times, just Control V, Control P, and they do that 5 times and then they analyze these molecules that they've built for the total number of electrons once they're all connected, and before they're connected and after they're connected. Notice here I'm telling them to click draft between publishing these different molecules, because draft, when they click draft, I'm able to see that at a glance view. And I'll show you the at a glance view in just a moment. Hold on for that one. Down at the bottom, there's more analysis. So in here, they could use the text tool to type a number, or they could handwrite things, which is kind of a nightmare. So a lot of text tool usage in this particular activity. The next one I want to show you is molecule polarity. So molecule polarity, I'm actually going to show you two versions. I'm going to show you the review and preview activity, where what I had them do, there was no tech connected to this at all. I just had them look at the molecule that was on the board and really deeply analyze it, identify electronegative atoms, draw bond dipole arrows, draw partial positive and negative charges, because all of these things and the polar bonds lead to students being better able to understand what molecule polarity is. So there was no writing in this activity at all, just a bunch of drawing and highlighting. If I go back to the main activity for that day, what you can see is in the instructions, students were supposed to open a simulation, go there and follow all the instructions that are, this is kind of a hybrid task instruction artifact outline activity that's in here. So there's some instructions and it's also a place for them to document their observations. They're supposed to manipulate models, observe dipoles, partial charges in response to an electric field and record their observations here on the whiteboard. But really what I'm asking them to do, not only write in the text boxes, is draw the bond dipole arrows, draw the molecule dipole arrows, and draw partial charges. So again here, making not only the resource dynamic and interactive, but really changing up the tasks the students need to do too. And the last one I want to share with you was a few days later than that, and I've referred to this lesson in the past. This is a lesson on intermolecular forces, and I'm choosing this one just because it has some drag and drop in it. This lesson has students go to an interactive tutorial and gain some information about intermolecular forces, but then also kind of apply that knowledge with a different simulation. So here they connect to a simulation on the second page. Yes, they make predictions on the first page. And then on the second page, they connect to a simulation. They test out these pairs of molecules and how tightly they're held together. And then they just drag and drop on a range or a scale of intermolecular strength, attractive strength. So here, students, the stakes are super low. Students don't have to write anything. They don't have to draw anything. And it is observation driven, but they only have to drag and drop. So I'd be a liar to say that part of my engagement strategy is not to make the action low stakes, because sometimes I get the most activity on the most simple tasks. And Seesaw provides the versatility for me to ask all sorts of things and really change it up for them to keep that engagement strong. And now I want to show you the most amazing features of this particular EdTech tool. The first thing I want to show you is the at a glance function. This is one of those functions, one of those tools that's going to make your workflow so much easier. This is one of those functions that's going to separate you from hours of scoring and instead continually give you a great grasp, a great understanding, a great knowledge of every single one of your students in a super short amount of time. Instead of clicking into the activity present to class, I'm going to click review. And then you can see here this whole screen opens up with all my student names, and you can't see the student names because obviously for privacy purposes I can't show you that, but you can see in general who's completed what and the degree to which they've completed it. When you're up close and personal with this screen, you can tell a lot, and you can begin to design your activities to include more or less actions so that you can better at a glance look at this. It does require the students to press the draft button or the submit button, so it's not a totally real-time update, but you can continually remind your students to do that. And really, as a classroom teacher in person, you're probably looking at this after the fact, maybe on your prep period, and just see how all the students really did do, because you're not going to get a great understanding from walking around the room and looking over their shoulder. This is going to give you a great understanding without having to grade a formal assignment and still seeing all the details of their work. Now, as an online teacher, sure, I could assign something in Google Docs or as a Microsoft Word file, but frankly, they're all going to have to upload those separately, and just in clicking time to click into every one of those assignments will take a large amount of time. So this totally makes it possible for me to get to consistency, and that's the big goal of this lesson for you today. This video is EdTech tools that make active learning, exploration, discovery consistent for you. The second amazing feature that you probably have already realized is that Seesaw is a digital portfolio product, which basically means every activity I've assigned all year long, students have access to. Any of my students can go back to September or October or November. It's currently April. And look at the work that they did. They can use it to review for a final exam or a midterm exam, or maybe a state assessment that's coming up. We don't have those for chemistry in Pennsylvania, but we do for biology. And that would be a fantastic way to get students to review, because they not only go back to their activity and their results, but they can click into that simulation, that web tool that you've shared with them, all over again and go through the entire learning experience again, except this time it's their second time, so they're a little bit more proficient and they just need to, like, you know, clean up the cobwebs out there. This portfolio feature also makes it super easy to share with other stakeholders like parents, tutors, support personnel, principals, or instructional coaches. The last thing I want to share with you, and this totally falls in that after instruction bucket, feedback integrated into every single interactive whiteboard or activity that you create is the ability to comment on each individual student's work. Now, this isn't something I do every day. I don't actually comment on student work every day. But when they're working quietly and I see them making progress, I might hit a little like button. It's a heart in Seesaw instead of a thumbs up, but I give them a like and they know I'm acknowledging their work. I can also write a short text-based message, or I can record my voice on the microphone for up to 2 minutes to maybe redirect them or give them some positive praise. When you use this feature, it goes a long way to establishing and enhancing that trust relationship we're trying to create with our students, especially when we're starting out with science as practice, active learning, exploration, because students in the beginning are so wary to share what they're thinking. They're so used to needing to find the right answer and so used to feeling like they don't measure up. Until they feel comfortable and confident, you're not gonna know exactly how much they know until you've developed that trust. And so this very simple, very low stakes for both of you, communication, connection really is key. And we're in the last leg of the tour here. Stick with me. This last portion of the video is going to share with you how you can make sure the learning is never lost. I'm talking about when your students are absent from class. Short story, my own child the other day was just telling me about how he had to miss class for something, I think band, and when he had to make up whatever work he missed, he just had to get notes from a friend. As the science teacher who is out here promoting active learning, discovery, exploration, and that science teacher just gives him notes to copy from a friend, it makes me cringe. So you never have to do that because you're gonna have this amazing EdTech tool. But not just when your students are absent, even when you're absent. When you create this culture of consistency and that natural curiosity that's gonna come out when you take time off and you have a substitute, you can leave them with this tool and they will make gains even in your absence. Sometimes students require extra time and you're able to send them home as homework to maybe finish something, or they can access it again the next day. Anytime you want students to work at their own pace, or you want to add in the flexibility of station work, this technology-based, inquiry-based, active learning kind of station work, that's when you might use book widgets. Now, I found book widgets when I finally decided I was going to commit to making every single one of my chemistry lessons as active as possible, collect an artifact of learning from every student every day as much as possible. But there was only one problem. In my online school, there are students who are granted asynchronous attendance status. This means that they're approved to not attend live session. Because in Pennsylvania, we have some pretty strict attendance rules, and I do meet with my classes every single day. This is not the type of cyber school where my whole job is about grading assessments. Not at all. And so when I started to explore how I would deliver active learning lessons to students who weren't in class, I became super concerned because these students were very used to just hopping on a recording and watching a recording and watching 50 minutes of lecture. And I knew they weren't going to get that from me. 50% or more of my class time involves students working quietly by themselves or in small groups on an activity. And so I give a little intro and I give a little closing, but most of the work is done by the kiddos. And so there's nothing to see there in the recording. I felt like I needed a solution to this problem before I even set out to redesign my whole curriculum. So you might be thinking, well, they just need to attend class. And that would absolutely have been a solution, and I could have demanded that. But one of my core values is to be as humble as I can be, to spread smiles everywhere, and to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do. And so So I really try to support our school's mission. I do believe in school choice. I have seen our school support students who really need it. And I want to play into that as whenever possible. I set out looking for ed tech to make it happen. It took lots and lots of searching, lots and lots of trial and error, but I finally found Book Widgets, which does have the versatility and the capability to basically mirror my live lesson in a single web page asynchronous format. Book Widgets has an outstanding number of features. But in this video, in the spirit of being strategic in our use of EdTech to systematize our work and make it as less stress for everyone as possible, I'm going to focus on developing worksheets and show you the worksheets function that I primarily use inside this tool. And in the spirit of consistency, I've brought for you the same three Book Widget worksheets that exactly match the seesaws we looked at before, the artifact outlines we looked at before for the same lessons in my chemistry curriculum. Here is our Lewis Structures for Molecules worksheet. Now, what you can see here is that when I designed this, this actually more closely matches my entire PowerPoint lesson, because what I use Seesaw for is just only artifact outlines for students to showcase what they're doing. But certainly I lead students through introduction, through some clarification, through some data analysis at the beginning and end of class. Here you can see a student working asynchronously would be able to understand very clearly the goals of the lesson with the learning intentions and the success criteria outlined. They do have that warm up, if you want to call it a bell ringer, review and preview that activates and integrates prior knowledge. Here, as I even incorporate my technology apps there. They can, in this particular example, they grab a snapshot of their work on the web, and they can upload it right here. So it doesn't have that control V, control P functionality, but they still can grab the image and share the image that they generated. And then there's a lot of text functionality, of course, so they can discuss the evidence that supports any answer to whatever question I ask there. I can include lots of text-based and imagery. So I do use word balls as a means of emphasizing vocabulary. And so wherever possible, I link to the virtual textbook I use, and I provide them a summary of what they really, really need to know without giving away the farm, you know, so to speak. In this example, they are given those instructions and a little bit of a visual guide and a written guide and their task instructions, what they're going to do. There's their embedded link to access the activity. And in Seesaw, I had them copy pasting their molecules. Here, they're saving those snipped versions of the graphics and uploading them. Then they can fill out in the data table that total number of electrons, before and after the atoms were connected, and further analysis. Then at the end, as part of data-dependent analysis, I always say, use the observations you documented during your learning experience to answer these questions. And these are multiple choice questions. Uh-huh. And what you can see here is one of my favorite parts of this tool, especially for asynchronous learners, a student who is absent for the lesson, or a student who needs extra support, like completed study guides or answer keys or extra time, you can click on the right answer and set these, program them to show you immediately correct feedback so you can see what is the correct answer. And the students know if they don't see green, they're thinking about it wrong. So it's redirection without you even needing to be present. Okay, oh, here we have some, you can do picture selection, so image selection, multiple choice. I mean, there's just so many different options. Let's take a look at the molecule polarity one. Again, we outline with goals. Here's a review and preview with a whiteboard tool, embedded in. So it's not super intuitive to use, but totally doable. My students do a great job with it. More links and more links and more ability to add their results as pictures and annotations. Here we have a classification activity where they could drag and drop different molecules as polar or nonpolar. Of course, these numbers connect to the molecules that were listed above. And more image selections. Okay, clicking over to types of intermolecular forces, you have more of the same. I always start out with the goals clearly aligned. Here's a whiteboard activity. Some word wall details the students might use, a link to the technology, and places to document notes primarily in this one, a lot of text functionality. Now, the primary feature that makes all this possible is this bank of 36 different actions that you can program your worksheet to do. It really complements the diversity of tasks you might assign to your students. The ability, as I showed you, to program to show correct answers immediately, game changer. The ability to access a password-coded answer key in 3 seconds, game changer. The ability to download a PDF copy, keep on the student computer, or to print out for a hard copy, game changer. Now, while there does exist a feature, an ability for Book Widgets to roster your class of students and collect their responses electronically, they don't have to download to their computer, they don't have to like send it to you in Google Classroom and all that. That's not a feature I currently use, but it can happen. Also, Book Widgets connects to some of those most popular learning management systems like Google Classroom, like Microsoft Teams, I believe, and also maybe Schoolology or Canvas. There's a select group of them that do that integration. So if you use those, that might be an even greater plus for you. Me over here, I use this weirdo third party LMS that doesn't connect with anything. So I have to be real creative in the way my students submit their work to me. But if you don't have students rostered, it is worth mentioning that there's no privacy violation here at all. When I distribute these asynchronous forms of the lessons to my students, I merely share them the link. They go in and they don't have to put in any identifying information. They just complete it, shows up as a web page, they save it to their computer, they send it to me in a different way, and they're done. Together, these three ed tech tools I told you about allow me to efficiently and effectively deliver a student-centered science experience to my students in my classroom every day. Using them allows me to offer more choice to my students, not just in what they do, but also in how they do it, the product and the process. And what's really best for me, besides streamlining my scoring time that I told you about, using these tools opens me up. If I was in an in-person face-to-face classroom, I would tell you it frees me from the front of the room. I'm no longer responsible for everyone. Instead, I can move about, even in my virtual classroom, and I can make those independent, individual connections with every student, supporting them through their struggles and encouraging them to find answers to their own questions, which is what learning is really all about. Plus, because all of these tools either provide the ability for students to engage in an inquiry experience or demonstrate what they've learned from an inquiry experience, I never have to wonder who knows what. Test time is never a surprise. Those scores are never a surprise. I always know how it's going to turn out. I did promise that if you made it this long, I'd share with you access to my EdTech Essentials Guide. This is a guide to active learning in science and really connecting that technology piece. Just go to labineverylesson.com/essentials to tell me where I should send your copy. This guide includes 9 of my favorite resources, my favorite websites to send students to that I can rely on for my chemistry curriculum to have students observe and cite evidence and inference and analysis. All of the resources I pretty much build my inquiry-based science activities from. Now, even though this is a collection, my own personal curated collection for chemistry, I have been mindful to share with you those that are more broad and do cover both the life sciences and the physical sciences at various grade levels and levels of complexity. As part of that gift, there's also a 60-minute walkthrough with you so that I could show you exactly and make some suggestions about when to use each of these resources with which grade levels and what types of courses. I've also included step-by-step instructions for how to create your first activity in Seesaw and the 7 reasons I wouldn't want to teach without it. There's also step-by-step instructions for you to create your very first book widgets worksheet so you can add more flexibility and versatility to your classroom, making it more student-centered and enhancing that ownership of student learning. So one more time, that address is labineverylesson.com/essentials. I'll see you back here soon.